to disable unneeded services. First off, inetd.com. That is where you're going to have about 30 unneeded services that are enabled by default. Telnet's in there. FTP is in there. What else? SadminD is in there. ToolTalk database server is in there. If you're not using them, disable them. If you are using any of, well, if you're using any of those, try and figure out why and see if you can't get rid of them. The way to do that is just quite simply to comment out the lines that aren't needed. Also, check your rc2.d and rc3.d directories. They have the startup scripts in there. You're going to want to move the file to a different name, just do and stop the service if it's already running. I usually just use a lowercase letter, then when it boots up, it won't get it. Other people put dots in front of them and do all kinds of things, but whatever method you want to use is fine, just as long as it has changed the name from a capital S with the number and the service. One thing that I like to let people know is the GUI interface. Checkpoint Firewall 1, people love the stupid GUI on that thing. So what I've been able to find out is if you've got some manager that wants you to run a GUI so he can come and look at the pretty firewall rules, what you can do is disable the GUI for having it running by simply killing RPC. If you have RPC dead, the GUI will not work. Then all you have to do if you want to enable the GUI is restart RPC manually, just S71 RPC start, and then start the GUI up, and you can do whatever you need to do and then disable it when you're done. Make sure to disable send mail. It is started by default. If it's not a mail server, you want to get rid of it. It opens up a ton of problems for you. To do that, that is in rc2.d, and it's the S88 script. If it is a mail server, configure it to prevent message source routing by commenting out the next few lines in the sendmail.cf. I'm not going to read those, but you can look at them, and they are on the CD. Expand and verify are started by default. What you want to do with those is add the following two lines to sendmail.cf. Opno expand, opno verify. That will kill those for you. Install and configure secure shell. On the CD, in the directory, I actually put the I pulled the HTML file for how to install OpenSSH on the CD so that you can read through it. It's got pretty good directions on what files you need. I actually wanted to put several other things, including OpenSSH and the recommended zip files on there, but when I got done with all the stuff I wanted to put on the CD, I think I had a CD by myself, so they told me to dial it back a bit. User quotas. Does anybody have any idea why you would want user quotas? Mainly? Go ahead. I'm going to assume you're right because I can't hear you, but if he said because you don't want your users to have, users are generally running their own scripts, they've got all kinds of things that are running in their home directories, you don't want them to have something get away from them and run away and take up all of your disk space, if you have a quota there, it will stop that from happening. Implementing user quotas is actually pretty easy. First thing you do is you edit the Etsy VFS tab and add the mount option for quota, which is just quota at the very end. There's a dash there by default. Replace it with quota. Create a file called quotas in the root directory of the file system. And for what we're doing here, we're going to take a look at export home. Touch export home quotas. Then you're going to need to set up a prototype quota entry, and to do that you use eggquota, eggquota proto user, whatever the user that you want to be there, and you edit the number of blocks, hard and soft blocks and inodes. What that does is that tells you how big of a disk space they're allowed to have, and also how many files they are allowed to have. The inodes are the number of files. So in our example here, they're getting 5 megabytes of space, and they are getting up to 1,000 files in their home directory. That will be when they get a warning. That's the soft limit. The hard limit is when it will actually cut them off. They will not be able to log back in until they get that fixed. I'm sorry, they will be able to log back in. They will not be able to create any new files or add any new space to the disk. Then what you need to do is replicate that across the board for all the users. So if you have 10 users in there, egg quoted minus P, then your proto user, and then just list out the names of the users that you want to set that quota up for. Next thing you do is activate them with quota on, which is quota on and the file system that you want the quotas to be enabled on. Quota check command is used next, and that is going to build the statistics. That's so that you can actually go back and see where people stand. Is anybody getting close to their quota limit and why? And to do that, just quota check minus A. Rep quota will then report that data back to you, and it'll look something like that, tell you where people are. Access control lists. Next, ACLs are very, very easy to set up in Solaris. Unlike some distros, it's one of the things I like about it because you can change things around and only let people get to what they need to get to. It will allow you to avoid the group account problems. To do that, just use setfacl to set the access controls. In our example here, what we're going to use is a file called access file. It'll give you your output of what it currently looks like. You can see that I have the ownership and the admins group can access the file. Do a get FACL on it, and it will show you that user has read-write, group has read-write, other has nothing. If we want to change that to allow a user named Russ, who was actually going to be sitting there showing you guys how to do this but is gone now, to have access to that file, he is not part of the admins group. You just do a set FACL minus M, the user and a colon, and then whatever user you want to have access to the file, what access he's going to have, in this case, read-write, and then the name of the file. Then when you do another get FACL on it, you will see that user Russ has been added to the list. Set UID and set GID files. I would actually recommend that rather than do exactly what I say here, I would actually script this out because otherwise it'll take you a long time. But you simply do a find on the type here that will give you your set UID files. You can pipe that out to a file somewhere to look at later because, like I mentioned before, there are a ton. For the most part, they do not. Very, very few of them actually need to be set UID. Same thing with set GID. Once you have those piped out, you can go through them kind of at your leisure and look at them. Or if you want to take the time to actually write a script out for it, you can have it grep through the file and pull out the ones that you want and change them, change the perms on them. Next, you want to find all the world writable files. Again, Solaris has quite a few of these. Simply do a find on them, pipe it out to a file, and go through and look at them. You should be able at that point to go through and figure out which ones need to be and which ones don't, because there aren't that many that do, especially in a server environment. Permissions. Root UMask set to either 027 or 077. To do that, you edit the etsy default login file and just set the root UMask to 077, which is what I actually recommend. The way the UMask works is it XORs, every time you create a new file, it XORs with the root UMask that is set in that file, and it will then give you the opposite. So in our case, every file that root creates is going to have a initial permissions of 700. You also want to check the system device permissions. By default, Solaris default install, the device permissions are set correctly. You shouldn't change them. there's really no need. What you would want to do is actually verify and diff and make sure that they don't change and they have not been changed. You can check that periodically. You also want to check the permissions on your UTMP. Ensure that they are set to 644. Ensure the Etsy password is set to 644. Gotta love the little LS graphic. And you want to make sure the Etsy shadow is set to 400. Also, delete or restrict the host.equiv, rhost, and .NET RC files. What I suggest doing on those is to actually touch and create them, and then chmod zero them so that when you look at them, they have no one has read, write, or execute access to any of those. Restrict the privileges on Snoop to root only. By default, I think that it sets it to, pretty much everybody can use it. So you don't want that. You don't want anybody who is on your network, especially if you're not in a switched environment, to be able to sniff all your network traffic. So go ahead and set the default the permissions to execute for root and no one else. The root user path. User bin, S bin, and user S bin. Root user really does not need to have anything other than that in his path. That's done by editing the dot profile file in the root's home directory. Also, this is another one that you're probably going to want to script out a little bit, and I had actually planned to do that for you guys, but again, they had me pull a bunch of stuff off the CD, so you didn't get everything. But you want to make sure that no user has a dot in his path. Just if you're going to do it manually, if you're in an environment where you don't have a lot of users, it's pretty easy. You can just echo each user's path and make sure that there are no dots in there. Alternatively, it can be scripted. Thanks. Aliasing. I recommend that you alias both the ls and the rm command. With ls, I like to add the dash a and dash b option, and with rm, I like to add the dash i. What that will do is, with ls, you will get all of your dot files without having to actually do a minus a. You will, every time you type ls out, you'll get all the hidden files immediately shown to you, so you can keep track of them and you make sure that nothing has popped up that you weren't aware of. With the dash i, what you get is it's going to ask you before you before it deletes the file. It will ask you, are you sure you want to do this? This is particularly important with root because root can delete very important files very quickly. The example that I always like to give is a mistake that I made a long, long time ago where I did it rm-rf ./*, and that is recursive, and it started going up and up and up and up and up, deleting files. I would have very much like to have had that ask me before it did it, destroyed my entire file system. To do that, depending on the shell that root is using or the user is using, you follow the steps on there. You just C shell, use the alias command inside the .login file. Born and corn, you add those lines to the .profile, and with bash, use the .bashrc and do the same commands that you would use in the born and corn shell. Include the system name in the root and admin shell prompt. Most of your admins have access to multiple boxes at a time. So they're SSH'd into four different machines running around making changes. What you want to do is make sure that for at least those people, that the name of the system that they're on is in their prompt. That way they don't accidentally change things on a machine that they did not mean to. Again, you do that with the C shell and the .login file, born and corn in the .profile, and with bash in the .bashrc. And you just do, for born and corn, the PS1 equals uname minus n. For the C shell, you set the prompt.